I welcome to Bhakti Sangha conference call to each and everyone. Today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Balram Shakti Prabhuji to enlighten us on the topic Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Chanto, 8th Chapter, 13th Verse. Before handing the call to Prabhuji, I would like to hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji to give the brief introduction about Prabhuji. Tiffany Mataji, you can please take over the call, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, dear devotees. His Grace Balaram Shakti Prabhu is a full-time monk at Govardhan Eco Village. He completed his BE in Metallurgical Engineering from NIT, Tiruchirappalli. Tiruchirappalli in 2002. Thereafter, he joined Pennsylvania State University and graduated with a PhD in Material Science in 2007. While at Pennsylvania State University, he took up Krishna consciousness as a member of the Vedic Society. He was mentored by His Grace Yugal Kishore Prabhuji. After he moved back to India, he chose to become a full-time monk at Radha Gopinath Mandir. Among others, he was mentored by His Grace Gauranga Prabhuji. In May 2010, he moved to Govardhan Eco Village and has been serving there full-time ever since. He is an extremely erudite scholar in Vaishnava scriptures and is one of the teachers at Bhaktivedanta Vidyapith. He is a disciple of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Tiffany Mataji. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Please accept our humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much for giving your very valuable time and association to us to enlighten on this topic, Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I would like to hand over the call to you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining today's session. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurabani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshadarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining today's session. So we will be continuing this discussion on the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th chapter, 13th verse. This is the life of Bharat Maharaj, and this is a prose verse again. This most of fifth canto is prose, so it will be difficult to, but still I will read, and then we will read the translation and purport, and then we will see what we can do. Actually, today's session, some of the part or a big chunk, I will sort of be revisiting the same theme that we took up last time, because I had some material which I could not cover last time. But before that, we will discuss something from the purport today. A small theme we will take up, and then we will revisit the same theme that we discussed last time. I hope devotees would not mind. So I will just read the verse and the translation, and then we will move ahead. Patishu cha mugda bhavena tatra tatra vishakta mati pranayabara hridayaha karpanyat sakhe skandena udvahati evam utsanga urasi cha adhyayo cha adhayo adhaya upalalayan mudam paramam avapa. So this is about Bharat Maharaj when he was in the forest. So now he has just reached he has now established a relationship with the deer. I mean, as you must have been hearing for the last many days. So here it is mentioned that his mind filled with affection and attachment as he walked here and there in the forest, unaware of the dangers, he would carry the deer on his shoulders since it was helpless, or keep it on his lap or chest. Petting the deer, he felt great bliss. So how Bharat Maharaj was dealing with the deer is being described. You know, he has already become very attached to the deer now. So, Srila Prabhupada here writes in the purport, Maharaj Bharat left his home, wife, children, kingdom, and everything else to advance his spiritual life in the forest. But again, he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. He had left everything, but now he has become attached to a pet deer. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? Right? What is the use? So here, last time we saw that this attachment of Bharat Maharaj to the deer was orchestrated by Krishna for multiple purposes, but in this case also for setting the right example for the sadhakas or practitioners to show them that we should be very careful about becoming attached to material things. Like one of the 10th offense to the holy name is to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So in order to warn a practitioner about what he should get attached to, actually that is one of the reasons why Krishna orchestrated this whole thing. Otherwise, Bharat Maharaj at the stage of bhava, it is practically impossible for him to get attracted to a deer. Right? This theme we touched elaborately last time, but still I was not satisfied. You know, I could not cover a lot of portions which I wanted to cover. One who is serious in advancing his spiritual life, Prabhupada writes, should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. But Prabhupada says, sometimes in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. So Prabhupada here is talking about Yukta Vairagya. Right? We may have to accept, we can't just reject everything and go to the forest. We don't necessarily have to. It's not a recommendation. If we remember this, there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities. If we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, it should be utilized in Krishna's service, then Prabhupada assures that then we don't have to worry. We will not be victimized by materialistic activities. Right? So today, to start with, I will not immediately go to last week's theme. Then I'll get stuck up there. Then it won't be possible to move further. So I will just speak shortly or briefly on this theme of Yukta Vairagya. Where this theme exactly comes? Where is this? You know, where does this theme come? This theme is discussed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Nectar of Devotion by Srila Rupa Goswami. So while discussing about the various limbs of devotional service, after describing the 64 limbs of devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami says that what are the things which are not limbs of devotional service? So he talks about Varnashram not being a limb of devotional service. And then here he says, actually, Jnana and Vairagya are not limbs of bhakti, he says. Jnana means cultivation of knowledge that may not be favorable for Krishna consciousness. Okay. And Vairagya means, we will see. Vairagya literally means renunciation. Okay. So now, why is it mentioned not to be a limb of bhakti? Now, for that, we have to understand what is the meaning of limb of bhakti. Limb of bhakti. What is the meaning of limb of bhakti? Limb of bhakti means that activity which, when you practice, consciously helps you progress on the path of devotional service. That is a limb of bhakti. But he says, if you consciously practice vairagya, you will not progress on the path of devotional service. This is what Srila Rupa Goswami wants to say. Even though here Prabhupada does talk about vairagya, that not to get attracted to. In order to preach, we may accept material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. So therefore, here vairagya means to reject everything which has some potential in Krishna's service, you reject that also. Thinking that, oh, I will get, you know, this is material and I should stay away from anything material. So we will try to understand this little bit more deeply. So Srila Rupa Goswami, he says, Jnana Vairagyayor Bhakti Praveshaya Upayogita Ishat Pratamam Eveti Na Angatvam Uchitam Tayoho. So he says, Jnana and Vairagya, Jnana Vairagyayoho Bhakti Praveshaya Upayogita. So little bit of Jnana and Vairagya is needed for entering Bhakti. And that too, Ishat Pratamam Eva. And only in the beginning of Bhakti, it is little bit useful. But still, Na Angatvam Uchitam Tayoho. But they cannot be accepted as limbs of Bhakti. Okay. So now Jiva Goswami commenting on this, he says, what Jnana is he talking about? Right? Because Bhagavad Gita is also Jnana. Bhagavatam is also Jnana. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we are reading, is a kind of jnana. So what jnana is not a limb of bhakti? Because one of the five most potent limbs of bhakti is to relish Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in the form of knowledge only. So here he says, jnana here refers to realization of Tvam Padartha, Tat Padartha and Tatvamasi. So Tvam means knowledge of Jiva. And Tat means knowledge of absolute truth. And Tat Tvam Asi. Tattvam Asi means knowledge of the qualitative oneness. Between the Jiva and the Absolute Truth. So, what is that knowledge which is favorable for Bhakti? Knowledge of the soul is favorable. Antavanta ime deha nityasyoktaha sharirinaha. That how the body is perishable, but the soul is eternal, the soul cannot be cut. And that the soul is a servant of Krishna. All these things are favorable for Bhakti. So, Tvam Padartha is favorable. Tat Padartha, knowledge about the nature of the Absolute Truth, which is described throughout Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam in the 7th chapter, 9th chapter. This subject matter is very favorable for Bhakti. And in one sense, the qualitative oneness of the Jiva and the Absolute Truth is true. This is true, even though it is not completely true, right? Because Krishna has 64 qualities, right? Whereas the Jiva has only 50 qualities, and that too in infinitesimal quantity. So therefore, to say that the Jiva is qualitatively one with Krishna is not completely true. So whenever we talk about Jiva's qualitative oneness with Krishna, it means the Jiva is qualitatively similar to the Lord rather than similar to matter. So it is a comparative. When you look at the Jiva, whom is he similar to? Is he similar to Krishna or is he similar to dull matter? So definitely Jiva is more similar to Krishna than he is to dull matter. So in that sense. So for the impersonalists, they very much focus on this third aspect also, the qualitative oneness between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. But this is not very favorable for devotional service. Because if the living entity starts hearing that I am non-different from Krishna, I am non-different from Krishna, like that, then how would the living entity develop the inspiration to serve? Because if there is non-difference, then why should I serve and he accept the service all the time? Sometimes he can serve and I can accept the service, right? So therefore, when he says that jnana is unfavorable, it means this kind of jnana, which is favorable for a cultivation of impersonalism, right? So he says, the word Ishat somewhat means that knowledge of the Jiva and Brahman are useful, but realization of oneness should be rejected. Because this is not favorable. This kills the service attitude of the living entity. And then when we talk, this is about Jnana. Anyway, now the subject matter we are discussing is Vairagya. So he says, Vairagya in the verse means that the type of renunciation that is useful only for Brahma Jnana. So that which the jnanis and the yogis practice, that kind of vairagya is unfavorable for bhakti. One should not exclusively practice it. One should not try to, one's consciousness should not focus on, I should say no to this, I should say no to this, I should say no to this. So that is, rather one should start thinking what is favorable for Krishna, right? So that part of vairagya, which is contrary to bhakti, should be rejected. That is the meaning of Ishat in relation to Vairagya. Ishat means somewhat or little bit. Right? Ishat Pratama Meveti. Jnana and Vairagya are somewhat useful only in the beginning of Bhakti. That means that they are suitable only at the stage of giving up attachment to other objects. When attachments have been given up, and a person begins practicing bhakti, jnana and vairagya becomes significant, insignificant. So basically, if you see, even before one reaches the stage of shraddha, right? Before one reaches the stage of faith in the process, maybe some level of cultivation of jnana and vairagya may be favorable. But even that detachment is brought by association of devotees only. Right? So we saw first how does we discuss this theme of how one receives the seed of devotional service. So it starts with Satam Kripa. Right? Satam Kripa means a devotee becomes compassionately disposed towards that living entity. Compassion of a devotee leads to what is called as Mahat Seva. So Mahat Seva means he engages the Jiva in some favorable service. And that leads to accumulation of favorable experiences. Which is called as Agyata Sukriti. Okay. When this Agyata Sukriti accumulates over many lifetimes, it leads to what is called as Shraddha or faith in the process. And the nature of this faith is that there is a level of jnana and vairagya. And this is not exclusively cultivated, but this jnana and vairagya is naturally born by the influence of the devotees. Right? Satam, Kripa, Mahat Seva. Like that. By the influence of the devotees, it naturally manifests. So therefore, one need not exclusively or separately cultivate this. Right? And Srila Jiva Goswami says, also, after beginning bhakti, thinking of these processes will distract a person from bhakti. Ideally, one should be thinking about what can I do to favorably please Krishna rather than think about how can I accumulate knowledge or how can I become very detached in this material world? The purpose of our life is not to become the most detached person, whereas the purpose of our life is to establish a loving relationship with Krishna. So thus, they are useful only in the very beginning of bhakti, which means even before one starts bhakti. And after one starts bhakti, one should not be focusing on cultivating vairagya or jnana, right? Which is that which is unfavorable for bhakti. So what is the problem with cultivating vairagya and jnana? What is the problem with exclusive cultivation of jnana and vairagya? What is the problem? Srila Rupa Goswami says, Yadube chitta katinya hetu praya satam mate sukumara swabhaveyam bhaktis tad hetur irita. He says, Yadube, because this jnana and vairagya prayah, generally when cultivated exclusively, chitta katinya hetu, it makes the heart very hard and harsh. Therefore, satam mate, therefore great devotees or people who are knowledgeable with the science of bhakti, they have concluded that bhakti hi tad hetu ririta, that bhakti alone is the cause of entering into bhakti. You cannot say that one who is very detached or one who is very knowledgeable, he can enter bhakti, because knowledge or vairagya is not the cause of bhakti. Bhakti only is the cause of bhakti. And what is the nature of bhakti? He says, sukumara swabhaveyam. Sukumara swabhava means the nature of bhakti is it makes the heart very soft. And the nature of jnana and vairagya when cultivated separately is that they make the heart very hard. So therefore it becomes an obstacle to progressing in bhakti rather than favorable. Right? So therefore, so this verse speaks of another fault in being attached to jnana and vairagya. The problem is that they cause hardness in the heart. So now, how do they cause hardness? How do they cause hardness? Right? That is also explained by Srila Jiva Goswami. He says, in jnana, one must deliberate on the truth by defeating a variety of other philosophies. And in vairagya, one must renounce enjoyment by repeated toleration of suffering. So you have to renounce enjoyment by saying no, 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 no. And in saying no, 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 no to sense gratification, what happens is one unconsciously starts saying no to emotions also. Right? So in saying no to sense gratification, they end up saying no to emotions also. And emotions are favorable for bhakti. Emotions nourish bhakti. Right? So therefore, when someone is so much focused on saying no to sense gratification, one ends up saying no to emotions. One starts seeing all kinds of emotions as being an obstacle to bhakti. But this is a big mistake actually. Emotions are the life of bhakti actually. Bhakti is nourished by favorable emotions, right? So the very nature of these practices refers to jnana and vairagya. Is very unpleasant, and thus the heart becomes similarly harsh. This is the opposite of sweetness and softness of the heart, which is what our heart is supposed to become as a result of our practice of bhakti. But then there is a big question. There is a very important question. Someone will say, hey, you are rejecting vairagya, but how can a person enter into the higher and higher stages of bhakti without some sort of assistance. Right? So won't he need the assistance of jnana and vairagya? Right? Won't he need the assistance of jnana and vairagya? This is the question. So if he is not detached, if he is not knowledgeable, he would definitely get benefited by taking shelter of jnana and vairagya. How can he just stand on the legs of bhakti? So the answer is given. He says, bhakti is said to be the cause of entering bhakti, and previous acts of bhakti alone are the cause of entering into higher stages of bhakti. So one does not have to take additional help of jnana and vairagya. So this is like one is lame, he can take help of crutches, right? If on both hands he has some crutches, you know, if a lame person can definitely get benefited by crutches. But what if a perfectly healthy person if he uses crutches, right? A person who is good enough to run a 100 meters race, okay, will he complete the race fast with crutches or without crutches? Naturally without crutches only. So someone who is lame, which means who does not have devotional service, mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim, right? Yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinatarina, right? So a lame person, a blind person, by the help of bhakti he can cross over the ocean of material existence by the mercy of guru, right? So a lame person can get some help using the crutches, but a perfectly healthy person, his progress will be stunted by using the crutches. So a perfectly healthy person is one who already has faith in pure devotional service. If someone has faith in pure devotional service, if he uses the crutches of jnana and vairagya, then his progress will get stunted. But if someone does not have bhakti, then he can probably make use of the crutches of jnana and vairagya. But even then, if he accepts bhakti, he will again become healthy. Okay. So, a lame person, by accepting bhakti, will become healthy and will not need crutches. But if he refuses to accept bhakti for whatever reasons, then he can take help of the crutches of jnana and vairagya and he can progress. So this is what Srila Rupa Goswami is in from the 20th chapter of 11th canto, where Krishna tells Uddhava, tasmat mad bhakti yuktasya yogino vai madatmanah na jnanam na cha vairagya. Okay, so he says, therefore, in my devotional service, madatmanah, whose heart and mind is filled with thoughts of me, na jnanam na cha vairagyam praya shreyo bhavediha. His means of attaining perfection is not jnana or vairagya, his means of attaining perfection is practice of bhakti only. Right? So, then someone may say, oh, if I don't practice jnana and vairagya and practice only bhakti, what if I desire the goal of jnana? So, the goal of jnana is liberation. Right? The goal of jnana is liberation. And the goal of Vairagya is actually Jnana. To attain the qualification for Jnana is the goal of Vairagya, right? So if I reject Jnana and Vairagya, can I still attain the goals of Jnana and Vairagya? What if I want liberation? So he says, Rupa Goswami says, okay, let's say if your goal is not to please Krishna, if your goal is to attain liberation, he says, Kintu Jnana Viraktyadi Sadhyam Bhaktyaiva Siddhyati. However, the goals of Jnana and Vairagya and other processes are achieved by Bhakti alone, right? He says the goal of Jnana is liberation and the goal of Vairagya is Jnana. These are indeed achieved by Bhakti alone. And he quotes this very famous verse again from the 11th canto, 20th chapter. Yat karmabir, yat tapasa, jnana vairagya taschayat, yogena dana dharmena shreyobir itarairapi, sarvam madbhakti yogena madbhakto labate anjasa, swarga apavarga maddhama katanchidadi vanchati. So in this verse, Krishna tells Uddhava that, my dear Uddhava, whatever can be achieved by karma, jnana, yoga, tapasya, everything, my devotee just by practicing bhakti yoga can attain it. So even if you take up to bhakti yoga with any other desire other than the desire to please Krishna, but still if you stick to the process of bhakti yoga alone without resorting to the crutches of jnana and yoga, jnana, vairagya or karma or anything, so then you can achieve that success very easily. Anjasa, he says. Sarvam madbhakti yogena madbhakta labate anjasa. Very quickly he can achieve. Right? So therefore, akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradihi tivrena bhakti yogena ejeta purusham param. That's what Bhagavatam says, right? So now there is an argument. Okay? There is an argument that is presented by the opposing party. They may say, okay, this proposal we do not accept. There is a problem with this. What is the problem? He says, previously, Vairagya was condemned at the beginning of bhakti because it causes the heart to become hard. You rejected Vairagya because you said the heart will become hard. But do you realize what will happen if Vairagya is rejected? He says, if Vairagya is forbidden, the person practicing bhakti will be filled with material desires. Right? And to have such material desires while parallelly practicing bhakti will kill bhakti, won't it? Right? Prabhupada always used to say, material sense gratification and devotional service go ill together. So, if you are rejecting Vairagya, then how will he save himself from material desires? Right? Because Vishnu Puran says, Vishayavishta chittasya Krishna vesha sudurvatah Varuni diggatam vastu Vrajan naindrim kimapnuyat. The Shastras say the person absorbed in material enjoyment is far from being absorbed in Krishna. Right? How can a person going east catch an object moving to the west? Right? Like if someone while playing cricket or baseball, let's say, if he hits the ball to the left hand side, if someone runs in the right hand side to catch the ball, can he catch? So similarly, the person is telling, look, you are telling Vairagya is not needed, it need not be cultivated. So if Vairagya is not cultivated, then how is it possible for the mind to get focused on Krishna? It will only be thinking about sense gratification. So in response to this, Srila Rupa Goswami says, what is the solution? What is the solution to this problem? He says, Ruchim udvahatas tatra janasya bhajane harehe vishayeshu garishtopi ragaha prayo viliyate. He says, if a person harehe bhajane ruchim udvahatah, if he develops some taste for worshipping Krishna, some taste for worshipping Krishna, some faith in worshipping Krishna, Vishayeshu Garishtopi, even if he has strong material attractions, he may have very strong conditionings, right? Prayo Viliyate, those attractions will for the most part be destroyed, Ragaha, during sadhana without resorting to Vairagya. So all he needs to do is to keep fanning this ruchi. He has to keep fanning this taste for serving Krishna. Okay. So he has to keep fanning this taste for serving Krishna. And when that taste increases, parallelly detachment from matter also increases. Right? Bhakti Pareshanubhavo Viraktir Anyatra Chaisha Trikayeka Kala. Right? So parallelly, as and when one practices bhakti, gradually the influence of rajogun and tamogun, the influence of mode of passion and ignorance will go down. This attraction for sense gratification is a natural byproduct of mode of passion and ignorance. So as and when one progresses, when the influence of passion and ignorance goes down, automatically the material desires will go away. And the influence of rajogun and tamogun can vanish when one progresses on the path of bhakti. So all that he needs to do is keep fanning this attachment to serving Krishna. Right? So this is the assurance that Srila Rupa Goswami gives. Don't worry. Don't get distracted. Keep focusing on enhancing your taste for serving Krishna and Guru. That's where you should focus. Right? So Srila Jiva Goswami commenting on this, he says, having a taste for bhakti will destroy the attachment to material objects. Thus, the hardness of heart caused by practice of vairagya will not take place and still detachment will manifest. Right? So, if someone is very much attached to eating an ice cream, let's say butterscotch ice cream. Okay. So if he says no, whenever butterscotch ice cream comes, he says no, no, no. Then what happens? Actually, he is not addressing the rajogun, which is the root cause of that desire to eat ice cream. But he is externally saying no, no, no. So what happens? He's sort of damming up that desire. He's just building a dam. And the desire is increasing, increasing, increasing. At some stage, the dam will not be able to hold that water. The dam will break down and then the person will start binging on that ice cream. Instead of eating one cone, he will end up eating one full brick of butterscotch ice cream. Right? Because he is not addressing the root cause of the problem, which is mode of passion. Right? But when a favorable desire is replaced, like let's say if that same person gets married, he gets a child and he develops lot of affection for the child, right? Then what happens? Then when the child asks for that butterscotch ice cream, he gladly gives that ice cream and he forgets about it actually, right? So when a favorable desire replaces, then he's not damming up that desire. He will not binge on that ice cream anymore because he is getting a far superior satisfaction by seeing that smile on his child's face. Right? So that is the nature of bhakti. So that bhakti for pleasing Krishna, when the desire to please Krishna is developed, and as a result of the desire to please Krishna, when we naturally give up certain things which are unfavorable for bhakti, that will not cause the heart to become hard. And this is not rocket science. This can be understood even from a very mundane point of view also. Like I gave the example of a person becoming a father. When he sees that smile on the child's face, he does not regret giving up that ice cream, right? So at the stage of ruchi or taste for bhakti, material attraction will be destroyed for the most part. So gradually when he progresses, automatically material attraction will go away. The meaning is that it will be completely destroyed with the maturation of bhakti. So when he reaches the stage of bhava or prema, it will be completely gone. But before that, it will be proportionally gone, right? It is not mentioned but understood from this statement that the taste for bhakti is not only produces vairagya, but it also produces jnana, right? So naturally, practice of bhakti produces the needed knowledge, and also it causes vairagya. Also, a natural detachment is produced, right? So he quotes this verse from famous verse from Bhagavatam. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah. When one engages in the pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudev, Janayati, it naturally gives birth. Ashu, very quickly it gives birth to Vairagyam, a natural sense of detachment, and Jnanam, and knowledge. So it is naturally born as a byproduct of bhakti. One need not externally cultivate it, actually. So what is the nature of that detachment which is favorable for bhakti, which is a byproduct of bhakti? What is the nature of vairagya, which is a byproduct of bhakti? What is the nature of this detachment or vairagya? He says, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjatah nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate. Yuktam means appropriate. Vairagya means detachment. What is appropriate detachment? What is the kind of detachment which is suitable for bhakti, or which is a natural byproduct of bhakti and hence is favorable for bhakti? He says, the vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development. Yata arham upayunjataha. He engages objects which are suitable for devotional development. We will try to understand this little bit more. Anasaktasya vishayan, while he himself is detached from it. Yuktam vairagyam uchate. This is said to be a vairagya which is suitable for bhakti. And the nature of this vairagya is nirbandha krishna sambandhe. The object should be persistently utilized in Krishna's service. So there are three aspects of yukta vairagya. Right? What are the three aspects of yukta vairagya? He says, first, anasaktasya vishayan. Right? Anasaktasya vishayan means no attachment to the object or service. Right? You don't have specific attachment to that service or object. And the second aspect is yata arham upayunjataha. Yata arham upayunjataha means it is used only as it is meant to be used. Krishna's service. Right? And then the third aspect of yukta vairagya is nirbandha krishna sambandhe. Nirbandha krishna sambandhe means that utility in Krishna's service must be persistent, continuous. So basically, someone, if you, what do you, how do you know whether this object is meant for Yukta Vairagya or not? You should not have specific attraction for that object. Oh, I really want to use it. I really want to use it like that. And that object should be used as it is meant to be used and only in Krishna service. And there should be persistent usage of that object only in Krishna service. Whenever it is utilized, it should be utilized only in Krishna service. Not like, you know, we have a laptop or mobile phone. Sometimes you use it for Krishna service, sometimes you use it for not so Krishna conscious activities also. So that is not Yukta Vairagya, right? So where we ourselves have attraction for that object. So actually, if you see, Yukta Vairagya is not easy. Yukta Vairagya is an elevated stage of practice. So devotional service can be practiced at three levels. Okay. So devotional service, I will clarify, pure devotional service can be practiced at three levels. All three qualified to be pure devotional service only. The first level or the lowest level is the level of dovetailing. So you already have attachment to particular things which you will anyway engage in that activity, and if it is dovetailable in Krishna's service, you do it, right? Oh Prabhuji, you know what, actually a deity worship, I don't have much attachment, but I really like to drive cars. So whenever devotees would go to market, I will take them. Whenever they want to go to the railway station, I will drive them. Whenever they want to go to the airport, I will drive them. Whenever they want to go to a preaching program, I will drive them. Right? So this is dovetailing. You already have an attachment to a particular activity, which is dovetailable in Krishna's service. So you choose to do that more and more, of course, in Krishna's service. So that dovetailing is one level of practicing pure devotional service, which is acceptable. It is not outside the realm of pure devotional service, right? Then this little higher level is called as Yukta Vairagya. So Yukta Vairagya is where you don't have attachment to that object and you can engage it in Krishna's service. So for all of us, there could be some objects which we are not attached to and which we are willing to engage in Krishna's service. Like say, for example, a conch shell or a chamar or an agarbatti, right? So we utilize it in Krishna's service and we use it only when the service requires it, right? And we don't have any sense gratificatory attachment towards that. So this chamara and conch shell and all, mostly it can be used within the realm of Yukta Vairagya for anyone. But when it comes to, you know, a car or a mobile phone or a laptop and things like that, so then it becomes little dicey because we ourselves have attachment to it, right? So they slowly, when one progresses on the path of devotion, then gradually one will get detached from those objects also. Right? Then they can also be utilized under the Yukta Vairagya. And still higher than the realm of Yukta Vairagya is actually what is called as spontaneous devotional service. So this is at the stage of bhava and prema. So the nature of this spontaneous devotional service is mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Krishna Saukhyartham Eva Kevalam Udyama. Right? Krishna Saukhyartham Eva Kevalam Udyama. Every endeavor is impelled purely for pleasure of Krishna. In Yukta Vairagya, there is the impetus comes from scriptures. right? Oh, scriptures say this. This is not favorable for my bhakti. I should not be doing it like that. Whereas in spontaneous devotional service, the impetus is purely coming from a very spontaneous desire to please Krishna and see a smile on Krishna's face, right? So all these three fall within the category of pure devotional service only. But here, because the section that Rupa Goswami is discussing is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, he discusses this theme of Yukta Vairagya. That Vairagya, which is in one sense little favorable for progressing on the path of devotional service. Right? So, with this verse, the author shows the type of Vairagya which is suitable for entering bhakti and which was previously mentioned. The Vairagya of the person employing material objects only to the extent that they are favorable for his devotional development while being detached from material enjoyment is suitable for bhakti. So, I will just add one more slide here. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur gives a very nice, you can say, three-point formula to find out whether a particular object is meant for Yukta Vairagya or not. Okay, I don't have to add a slide actually, because I have some space here. Okay, anyway. So, he says that in this, there should be persistence in relating to the objects to Krishna. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's formula. Okay, I'm sorry. I have not shared the screen. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's formula. So he says, how do we know whether an object is fit for Yukta Vairagya for us or not? So he says, first thing, do you want it? He said that, do you want it or does Krishna want it? Okay, that is the first question we should ask. And the second question he says is, can you persistently utilize it in Krishna's service? Okay. And the third thing is that after utilizing it, do you feel more encouraged in your devotional service? Right? So, if you answer these three questions, you will know whether a particular object is meant for Yukta Vairagya for us or not. Do you want it or does Krishna want it? And can you persistently utilize it only in Krishna's service? And after utilizing the object, do you feel more encouraged in bhakti or do you feel distracted in bhakti? So if you answer these three questions, then it's a litmus test to understand whether that particular object can be utilized by us in Krishna's service as Yukta Vairagya or not. On the other hand, what is that Vairagya? Vairagya that is unfavorable for bhakti. It says, Prapanchikataya buddhya harisambandhi vastunaha mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam falgukatyate. So that parityaga, that kind of rejection, outright rejection, right? Hari sambandhi vastunaha, of things related to Krishna. They have relationship with Krishna, but we reject it. Or someone rejects it. Who rejects it? Mumukshubhi, a person who is desirous of liberation, he rejects it. Why does he reject it? ప్రాపంచికతయా బుద్ధ్యా. ప్రపంచ మీన్స్ మెటీరియల్ యూనివర్స్. ప్రాపంచికతయా బుద్ధ్యా మీన్స్ కన్సిడరింగ్ దట్ టు బి మెటీరియల్ హీ రిజెక్ట్స్ ఇట్. దిస్ ఇస్ ఫల్గు వైరాగ్య. ఫల్గు వైరాగ్య మీన్స్ ఇట్ ఈస్ యూస్లెస్ వైరాగ్య. బికాస్ దర్ ఇస్ అ డిఫరెన్స్ ఇన్ విచ్ ఐ మే సీ, ఓ ఐ సీ దట్ దిస్ పర్టికులర్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ హ్యాస్ యూటిలిటీ ఇన్ కృష్ణ సర్వీస్, బట్ ఐ ఆమ్ నాట్ ఎట్ రెడీ టు యూటిలైజ్ ఇట్ ఇన్ కృష్ణ సర్వీస్ బికాస్ ఐ హ్యావ్ అ వీక్నెస్ ఫర్ ఇట్. దట్ ఈస్ డిఫరెంట్. దట్ ఈస్ వాట్ సాధక థింగ్స్. దిస్ పర్సన్ థింగ్స్ ఓ దిస్ ఇస్ మెటీరియల్, ఐ షుడ్ నాట్ కమ్ ఇన్ టచ్. దట్ ఈస్ నో క్వశ్చన్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ. సో దిస్ ఇస్ ఫల్గు వైరాగ్య, వేర్ ద రిజెక్షన్ హ్యాపన్స్ విత్ అబ్సల్యూట్లీ నో కన్సిడరేషన్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ. ఇట్ ఈస్ ఓన్లీ సెల్ఫ్ కన్సిడరేషన్. ఐ డోంట్ వాంట్ టు సఫర్ ఇన్ దిస్ మెటీరియల్ వరల్డ్. దిస్ ఇస్ అ మెటీరియల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్, ఇట్ విల్ ట్రాప్ మీ టు దిస్ మెటీరియల్ వరల్డ్. సో విత్ ప్యూర్లీ దట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ కన్సిడరేషన్ ఇఫ్ వన్ రిజెక్ట్స్ ఇట్, దట్ ఈస్ యూస్లెస్ వైరాగ్య అండ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ అన్ఫేవరబుల్ ఫర్ వన్స్ భక్తి. వన్ షుడ్ ఆల్సో అండర్స్టాండ్ వాట్ టైప్ ఆఫ్ వైరాగ్య ఇస్ అన్సూటబుల్ ఆర్ యూస్లెస్ ఫర్ భక్తి. ద ఆథర్ దస్ స్పీక్స్ ఆఫ్ వైరాగ్య ఆఫ్ దోస్ అపోజ్ టు ద లార్డ్ విచ్ ఎండ్స్ ఇన్ ఆఫెన్స్. హరి సంబంధి వస్తు యూస్ఫుల్ ఇన్ ది సర్వీస్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ రెఫర్స్ టు థింగ్స్ సచ్ అస్ ద లార్డ్స్ ఫుడ్ ఆర్ రెమినెంట్స్. సో సమ్వన్ మే థింక్ లుక్ ఐ కెనాట్ యూటిలైజ్ దిస్, బట్ డెఫినెట్లీ సమ్వన్ ఎల్స్ కెన్ యూటిలైజ్ దిస్ ఇన్ కృష్ణా సర్వీస్, రైట్? లైక్ వి సీ రామానంద రాయ్, రైట్? సో రామానంద రాయ్ యాక్చువల్లీ హీ యూటిలైజ్ ది సర్వీసెస్ ఆఫ్ ద దేవదాసీస్, రైట్? బై హీ వుడ్ గెట్ దెమ్ రెడీ బై మసాజింగ్ దర్ బాడీ అండ్ టీచింగ్ దెమ్ డ్యాన్స్, రైట్? సో దట్ ఈస్ నాట్ యుక్త వైరాగ్య, దట్ ఈస్ స్పాంటేనియస్ డివోషనల్ సర్వీస్ బికాస్ హీ వాస్ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ థింకింగ్ అబౌట్ గివింగ్ ప్లెజర్ టు జగన్నాథ్. Whereas, we cannot think of that. Even thinking of such a thing, we will fall down actually. Right? So, but we understand that it can be utilized by a qualified person in Krishna's service. We don't doubt that. Someone else can utilize it. I cannot utilize. That is my weakness. I cannot utilize. But the object itself has utility in Krishna's service. One sees that. Whereas this false vairagi, he thinks he does not see anything's connection with Krishna. He sees, will it trap me in this material world or not? So that kind of vairagya when practiced will just harden the heart, right? So rejection of objects related to the Lord is of two types. Not asking for those objects related to the Lord and rejecting them in offered. So how this leads to hardening of heart? You know, or a hard-hearted person rejects like that. You know, I remember when I was in school, you know, we lived in a boarding school. So, parents were allowed to come and visit their children only once a month. So, but it's not that every month, every parent would visit. Like say, for example, when I was there for 5 years, I remember my parents had visited me only, my mother is sitting right next to me. So, you know, I remember my parents had visited me hardly twice or thrice, that's all, in 5 years. So literally, we were fed up with, mess food. So we used to look out for something different, right? So second Sunday of every month, parents were allowed to visit their children for a few hours. You know, they can come in the morning and stay with their children till the evening and then they have to leave. So they used to bring, parents used to bring a lot of nice foodstuffs. So all the other children whose parents would not have come, you know, they used to come and, hey, please give me some like that. You know, so we used to have one of our I can't call him friend, but one of my hostel mates, such a sadistic person, you know, hard-hearted person. So he did not have any specific penchant or taste for eating those things. So but his parents used to bring some of the finest food items, you know, very very much relished and eagerly awaited by all the children. And every month his parents used to come because they lived not so far. So people used to, you know, as soon as his parents would leave, we all would go and stand next to him, hoping that he will share something with us. But he used to open his food packet and he used to look at it he said, "Oh, I don't like this." And he used to just dump it in the drain. He used to just dump it in the drain, literally in front of us. And then he would open the next packet and he said, "Oh, I don't like this." And he used to dump it in the drain. And I am talking about a 12, 13-year-old boy, right? So how could someone be so hard-hearted? I mean, you can be detached in much more pleasant ways, right? Share it with others and you will gain their relationship, you will gain their friendship, and they will come to you when you are in need. But what would he gain? We all would get together and beat this fellow up, you know, black and blue, literally, for this sadistic act, right? So the point is, you know, this is the kind of Gyani's detachment. Oh, I don't like it. Then who is talking about your likes or dislikes? Krishna likes it. Are you willing to think about it? So this kind of detachment makes the heart very hard. So that is not the kind of detachment which is very favorable for Krishna's service. So one should understand that the second type of rejection becomes an offense, especially when you reject something that is very dear to Krishna, a remnant of Krishna. When you reject it, it is an offense, right? So this is, he quotes a verse from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Prasada Agrahanam Vishnu. Vishnor Varjayed Vaishnava Sada. The Vaishnava should never refuse the prasad of Vishnu. That is an offense like that. Right? So, this is something about Yukta Vairagya, which I wanted to share. I wanted to touch something upon, something on the subject matter which I left last week. But already we are running out of time. Maybe some things I will just touch. So, Srila Vishnachakrita Thakur, starting this chapter, in the beginning, the first verse of this chapter, he gives some very important insight into this chapter, because this is the chapter in which he is going to get, Bharat Maharaj is getting attracted to the deer, right? So, Srila Vishnachakrita Thakur writes, the 8th chapter describes how Bharata raised a fawn and meditating on it, attained the body of a deer in his next life. So, why did he become a deer, right? Because we do hear that Neha Bikramanashosti Pratyavayona Vidyate Swalpamapyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bayat. Even if one, this is a very important point, right? Because there are two principles, right? There are two principles. One is the principle of Neha Bikramanashosti. And then there is a principle of antakale samameva. Or yamyam vapi smaran bhavam. Okay. This is very important point. So, neha bikramanashosti pratyavayona vidyate swalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayad. Even little bit of progress you make on the path of bhakti, you are at least guaranteed a human life. This is what this verse says. And the verse yamyam vapi smaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram tam tamevaiti kaunteya sada tadbhava bhavita. This verse from the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, whatever you think at the time of death, you will attain such a form. So now, which of these principles applies to a devotee? Right? Which of these principles applies to a devotee? Bharat Maharaj had not performed little bit of bhakti. He had performed so much bhakti that he had reached the stage of bhava. But at the same time, at the time of death, due to whatever reasons, he happened to remember the deer and not... Okay, someone has raised your hands. I think I'll pause at the end of the discussion for discussing questions. Of course, I did ask this question, but I was not expecting you to answer. Ideally, I would have liked an interactive session throughout, but you know, the shortage of time, paucity of time does not allow to entertain that. So I apologize for that. Ideally, I would have wished to hear from you, but I will have to wait till the end of the class to pause for the question answer session. So I apologize for that. So here he says, which of these principles applies to a devotee? Of course, please don't raise your hands. Will the person at the time of death, even if he is a devotee, if he has performed significant devotional service at the time of his death, if he happens to think of an animal, will he take birth of an animal? So this is a question. Actually, Ramanujacharya, when he approached after Yamunacharya leaves his body, he was not fortunate enough to personally receive initiation from Ramanujacharya. So from Yamunacharya, and Ramanujacharya had a desire to accept initiation from Kanchipurna. So he goes to Kanchipurna and he says, please give me initiation. So Kanchipurna says, he's a very humble person. So he says, no, I am not qualified to become your guru, but I can ask Varadaraj, because he was so close to Varadaraj that Varadaraj would speak with him. So I can ask Varadaraj about this. And then Ramanujacharya asks few more questions. So one of the questions is, does this principle of yamyam vapi smaran bhavam apply to devotees also? To a surrendered soul, what if he cannot remember Krishna? If he remembers a material object at the time of death, what will happen to him? So this principle he wanted to know. This was one of the six questions that Ramanujacharya asked to Kanchipurna, and Kanchipurna asked Varadaraj. So the answer to this question that Varadaraj gives is that for a prapanna, he says, antima smriti varjanam. So he says, this principle of you definitely have to remember Krishna at the time of death is waived. It's waived for a devotee. In fact, if you see in this 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this principle is described in the context of Yoga Mishra Bhakti, not pure devotional service. It is talking about mixed devotional service. But for a devotee, the principle of Neha Bikramana Shosti applies. Even if little bit bhakti, if he has performed, in his next life, he is at least guaranteed the body, a human body. Therefore, he will never get an animal body or a plant body for sure. This is guarantee. Because Varadaraj says, oh, this principle does not apply for devotees, he says. For pure devotees, even if, let's say, someone has to pass away due to some accident or something, or someone goes into coma or something, whatever reason, if they are not able to think of Krishna at the time of death, Krishna takes this principle of Neha Bikramana Shosti. Oh, he has served me. I should at least facilitate his getting a human body from where he can continue his service to me. So therefore, this Bharat Maharaj attaining the body of a deer has to be understood in this context actually. So what Srila Vishnu Jagadagur gives this very important insight, he says, Krishna, an ocean of cleverness, Krishna is clever here, protected this deer who was previously Bharat Maharaj to show that compassion, if it is an obstacle to bhakti, must be given up. So through Bharat Maharaj, he wanted to teach all other sadhakas that even if it may be compassion, which is generally a very good principle, but if it becomes an obstacle to bhakti, you should reject it. So in order to show it, through the story of Bharat Maharaj, he made Bharat Maharaj get the body of a deer. Otherwise, a person at the stage of bhava, it is impossible that he will not think of Krishna at the time of death. And second is, it is impossible that he will get an animal body because of thinking about a deer. This is not true for a devotee. This is not true even for a sadhaka. Right? The Lord shows his affection for his devotee by protecting Bharat in the form of a deer, so that he would fall in the ocean of remorse in order to drown in the ocean of prema. Right? Very poetic, he says. Right? So, which deer would every day go to the ashram of the sages with great eagerness to hear Krishna Katha? Right? Bharat Maharaj did that. Because Krishna personally, in the form of the deer, and which deer would feel remorse? Oh, Hari Hari Bifale Janam Gavainu. Which deer will sing like this? Oh, I have wasted my life. Manushya Janama Paya Radha Krishna Nabajiya Janiya Shunya Vishakainu. You know, having attained a human birth, by rejecting to or by neglecting to worship Radha and Krishna, I have knowingly drunk poison. Do you think any deer would feel remorseful? Right? Because animals are not reflective. Animals don't have reflective intelligence. Animals are completely impulsive. They just act on their instincts. Whereas Bharat Maharaj was constantly, in the form of a deer, he was filled with remorse and with great eagerness. And he was drowning in two oceans, in the ocean of remorse and in the ocean of prema. So which animal is like that? So Bharat Maharaj was not an ordinary deer. So, in this is the context we discussed last time. Of course, I'm running short of time. I will just quickly glance through it. So, we discussed on this theme of how a devotee is suffering, even a sadhaka devotee is suffering, is not due to his prarabdha karma. So, even though his anarthas or the impurities, material impurities in the heart, they may only gradually get destroyed from one to many to most to almost complete to complete. So, but still, his karma is immediately destroyed as soon as he takes up to the path of devotional service, right? So, therefore, one should not say that a devotee's suffering is due to prarabdha karma, right? And in this, we saw the commentary to this verse. Yasyaham anugrinami harishyeta dhanam shanaihi tato adhanam tyajantasya swajana dukkha dukkitam. Where Krishna says, if I want to especially favor someone, I take their wealth away, and when their wealth goes away, the relatives also reject them and he becomes completely distressed. So this is because so he says that the happiness and distress which appear to be prarabdha karma are given by the Lord himself. So, for a devotee, this is from the beginning stage of devotional service. Now, then we saw, how can the Lord, who is generally so affectionate to his devotee, how can the Lord make him suffer? He is called as Bhakta Vatsala. The understanding is, oh, when the father, understanding that the child, because of eating lot of sweets, he has developed some worms in his stomach, in order to perform some deworming, if he gives some neem juice, it is not that the father hates the child, that he wants to put him through the trouble of drinking that bitter neem juice. No, he wants to save the child from the worms within his stomach, which are actually taking up all his nutrition, right? So therefore, that is what the Lord is doing. Then someone may say, but the suffering of a devotee and the suffering of a non-devotee looks very similar. Why are you telling that he is suffering, the non-devotee is suffering due to karma, and the devotee is suffering due to the Lord's concern and benevolence? How would you explain this? So we saw that there are three factors which differentiate suffering due to karma and suffering due to Krishna. So he says, even though experience of happiness and distress destroys karma, the desire is not gone. Right? The karmic suffering is born due to the jiva's desire to enjoy in this material world. Whereas the suffering given by Krishna is not born out of the jiva's desire to enjoy, but it is born out of Krishna's desire to pull the jiva close to his lotus feet. Right? And that suffering lasts only till Krishna accomplishes that purpose of pulling the jiva closer to his lotus feet. He will not prolong that suffering beyond the accomplishment of that goal. Whereas in the case of suffering due to karma, the jiva will suffer till he till that karmic suffering ends. And this suffering, if the karma of the jiva is really bad, he can go to hell and suffer hellish suffering. But however great the mistake done by a devotee, Krishna will never allow him to experience extreme suffering. This is the three differences between karmic suffering and the suffering given by Krishna, even though they look similar from an external perspective. But then the question arises, but can't the Lord fulfill his purpose without giving suffering to his devotees? Why should he give suffering to devotees? Without having to give suffering to his devotees, can't the Lord fulfill this purpose? So he says, no, it will not be fulfilled, because the Lord tries to accomplish three purposes by giving suffering to the devotees. The first thing is he has to protect the secret of bhakti. Bhakti is very secret. You know, only when the devotee touches a person, only such a person can get bhakti. So if everyone sees that as soon as someone starts chanting or performing some kind of worship, immediately if their suffering stops, then people will give up all their other prescribed duties, even though they are not qualified for bhakti, right? And in this way, the opinions of the others who are qualified for karma, jnana, the smartas, their opinions will be uprooted. And also, if the devotee does not undergo some kind of material pangs or suffering, the sadhaka, he will not develop longing to meet Krishna. So, to increase his longing, Krishna gives him that suffering. And all these three purposes can be accomplished only if he gives at least some kind of suffering to the devotee. And moreover, only when the devotee is suffering, the Lord can appear in the form of Rama, Krishna, Varaha, Narasimha, etc. to deliver the devotee and to allow the devotee to participate in his leela. Right? Now, the point is, someone may say, but why can't the Lord come without putting the devotee into suffering? Is it necessary? Can't he come without the devotee suffering at all? So, he says, look, you don't really understand. A person who understands the nature of one who is a real relisher of rasa can appreciate this, right? Suffering to some extent can enhance the experience of bliss that follows, right? Night, a dark night enhances the appreciation of rising sun, the light that comes from rising sun. Hunger enhances the experience of eating a feast, right? And heat experience during summer enhances our experience of air condition. So similarly, some amount of suffering in this material world definitely enhances the experience of coming in touch with Krishna and appreciating it. So therefore, one should clearly understand that a devotee's suffering is not due to his prarabdha karma. So in this context, we did discuss about time's dual portfolio. So I won't go into the details. We saw that how time acts as a conveyor belt. And for a materialistic person, that conveyor belt carries the reactions to his own past karma. Whereas the conveyor belt of time remains the same, but for a devotee, the conveyor belt carries the desire of Krishna. So therefore, a devotee understanding that whatever situation I am put in, Krishna is putting me in that situation. And therefore, if I respond to this situation in the right way, then I will move closer to Krishna. Right? In this context, we discussed three things, right? There are three categories of people: a materialist, a perfected devotee at the stage of bhava and prema, and a sadhaka. For a materialist, his situations that he is in is given directly by karma, the law of karma. And the response to that situation for a materialist is governed by his three modes in the form of vasanas or impression. Right? For a perfected devotee who is at the stage of bhava or prema, the situations that he is put in is directly given by Krishna. Whereas his response to that situation is according to his spontaneous affection for Krishna. Whereas for a sadhaka like all of us, our situations are also orchestrated directly by Krishna. But our response, sometimes we may respond according to our three modes. We may respond according to our conditioned nature in the form of likes and dislikes. And sometimes we may respond to that particular situation according to the pure devotional value system that we have received from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Okay, so whenever we respond to a situation that Krishna puts us in according to our pure devotional faith, then we move one step closer to becoming a perfected devotee. But if we respond to that situation being driven by our material conditioned nature, then that step towards Krishna gets delayed. Then Krishna puts us into a different situation, hoping that, okay, now at least respond according to your faith. If we do that, we will take one step closer to Krishna, like that. And then we discuss this times dual portfolio. I won't get into the details. And then, of course, I did wanted to discuss about what does it mean when prarabdha karma is destroyed? Right, because you still have the same body, you still have the same parents, your siblings have not changed, your parents have not changed, your same body is there. So what do you mean when prarabdha karma is destroyed? This discussion, elaborate discussion, comes in Nectar of Devotion, but of course we don't have time to discuss that again. We are running short of time. So he says that prarabdha karma is destroyed means the qualities that one may develop due to that particular kind of, you know, if someone is born in a dog eater's family, you know, the natural qualities that may follow dog eater, you know, being brought up in a dog eater's family, that he will not be affected by those qualities. He will develop all good qualities. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura. All those good qualities he will develop. Right? But the body itself will not change. But Krishna removes the prarabdha karma and he says, I am there, I will handle it, you please move aside. So Krishna utilizes the same body, but he will orchestrate his future life situations. Like that. Of course, there is a lot of discussion. This one discussion itself might take one class, so I will choose not to touch this point now. And then I'll get stuck up. So the specific case of Bharat Maharaj, it is mentioned here in the same chapter, in the 26th chapter, it is mentioned Swarabdha Karmana. Right? It is mentioned, I will read some relevant part of the translation. He says, his heart afflicted with unfulfilled desire, Bharat Maharaj fell from his practice of yoga, from his detachment from material enjoyment achieved by bhakti. He had developed so much detachment from material enjoyment by his practice of bhakti, and he gave up the detachment. He even gave up his worship of the Lord. Why did he give up? What impelled him to give up? It says, Su-arabdha karmana or Swarabdha karmana. So, Swarabdha karmana can be split as Sva-arabdha karmana. Sva-arabdha karmana means by his own prarabdha karma. So he gave up worship of bhakti. He gave up his detachment by his own prarabdha karma. That is one meaning. But here, swarabdha karmana can also be split as su-arabdha karmana. Su Arabdha Karmana means by pleasant Prarabdha Karma. What is this pleasant Prarabdha Karma? He says something which looks like Prarabdha Karma, but it is orchestrated by Lord's special arrangement. So the Lord has specially arranged this Prarabdha Karma for that which looks like Prarabdha Karma, but it is not Prarabdha Karma, right? So he says, he fell, he refers to Bharat Maharaj, fell from his position in yoga and worship of the Lord by the influence of karmas of life which manifested a small deer to him. Prarabdha Karma is of two types, auspicious and inauspicious. The first type occurs by the will of the Lord to increase longing for devotion to the Lord, like sharp ointment applied to the eyes, right? So this is acceptable by the favorably by the devotee. So in the case of Bharat Maharaj, this is what happened. Being similar to Prarabdha Karma, it is accepted as such. That which creates more intense bhakti in the future takes place in those who already possess rati or bhava. This is the case of Bharat Maharaj. He possessed that rati or bhava. So this was directly orchestrated by Krishna. This is not due to Prarabdha Karma. And the second type occurs due to one's Prarabdha Karma, like that. So of course, there is more discussion to this, maybe some other time. Again, this is my standard problem. I generally tend to take more than what I can digest on my plate. So again, I have run out of time. So I think I will pause here, because I do want to spend some time taking some reflections and some realizations that devotees might want to share, or some questions. So I'll pause here, and if there are any quick questions, comments, or corrections, so I'll wait. So thank you all very much for your patience listening. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful, wonderful class. We are so grateful for you. I request the devotees, if anybody have any questions for Prabhuji or realizations, you can please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Please accept my humble obeisances. This was such a wonderful class. So every time you come, you give good PPTs for us. So is it possible to share the PPT? That is my request, actually. So it's very nice to go through.
Yeah, every time. I can share it, Shyamagauri Mataji, and she can send it across. Actually, all the PPTs are, you know, anyone wants, I can share. I'll share it with Shyamagauri Mataji, and she can share it with whoever
wants. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, thank you. So it was very nice which your explanation was saying about the karma, the prarabdha karma, and how Krishna is giving suffering to the devotees, the why he is giving the suffering. So it was very good to know. Only then we can't reach the precious thing very easy. That is a point which Krishna wants to make us. So that is the way, that is for how he is making us to suffer all, giving the sufferings. So I just want to ask about the Prarabdha Karma, Prabhuji. So can you just explain? I didn't get the point. So can you just give a point, give a light in that?
I mean, I'm still trying to grasp your question.
Prarabdha Karma, Prabhuji.
What is Prarabdha Karma? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, so I just, you gave two types or something in that, right?
Oh, acha. Okay. So two types of Prarabdha Karma, right? So I'll just...
Yes, Prabhuji.
I'll have to share the screen again. I'm sorry. So... So I will just add one slide. Okay, no need. So so Prarabdha Karma, he says, is of two types. Uh, right? So prarabdha karma, first thing, if you don't know what is prarabdha karma, so any activity someone performs, he gets two types of reactions. One kind of reaction which is experienced in this very lifetime, and one kind of reaction which is experienced in future lifetimes. So prarabdha karma is the reactions which one would experience in this lifetimes, or one is already experiencing in this lifetime. And this prarabdha karma is of two types. One is one is directly given by Krishna, and one is directly given as a result of his karma. Right? So that which is given by Krishna is only to devotees, and that which is a result of his karma is only for non-devotees. Okay? And that which is given by Krishna to devotees is to increase their longing to come back to Krishna. And that which is given to non-devotees is just a result of their own action. So this is like, so therefore in Bharat Maharaj's case, this is mentioned as su-arabdha karma. Right, so arabdha karma is prarabdha karma, and prarabdha karma is always bad. Whether it may be pious or impious, it is always bad because it causes repeated birth and death. But here, interestingly, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Shukadeva Goswami says, he calls it su-arabdha karma, means very favorable arabdha karma, which means it is that which looks like prarabdha karma, but it is orchestrated by Krishna to pull Bharat Maharaj closer to his lotus feet, like that. Is that okay, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful answer. Now I request Sukhasagari Mataji, you can please go ahead with your question, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranams. Such a wonderful class, Prabhuji. I'm sorry if I'm asking a repeat question. I was not clear when you were talking about the Neha Bikrama Nashosti verse and Yam Yam Mavapi Smaran Bhavam verse. So I was not clear what category you put Bharat Maharaj's case into.
Oh, okay. So Bharat Maharaj's case, it was a third category. It was not even... I mentioned that, good you brought out this point. I sort of had a feeling that I might end up confusing at least some devotees. So there are three categories of people. Okay. So first category are devotees. So devotees, the principle that works is Neha Bikrama Nashosti, which means human birth is guaranteed. Okay. This is for practitioners of pure devotional service, right? So then there are mixed devotees. Okay, so next devotees, the principle that applies is Yam Yam Vapi. Right, so they have to remember Krishna at the time of death to be guaranteed a human birth, or whatever they think they will get that. Or this is even for mixed devotees or non-devotees also. Right, and the case of perfected devotees. Okay, Krishna might sometimes, like the case of Bharat Maharaj, sometimes just to increase his eagerness, he gave him the body of a deer. Even though he is not a mixed devotee, he is not a non-devotee. So when even sadhakas would be guaranteed human birth, why would Bharat Maharaj, who had reached the stage of bhava, why should he become a deer? This was special arrangement by Krishna. So he does not fall in any of these categories. He does not fall in the category of Neha Bikrama also, Yam Yam Vapi also. He falls in the category where Krishna is personally making sure that he takes a deer's body like that. Is that okay, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji. I was just wondering, so you said perfected devotees, mixed devotees, and what was the other one you said, Prabhu? Yeah. First you said devotees, then mixed, and then perfected. So I was not clear what you meant by devotees and then perfected. So devotees would be sadhakas, and perfected are who are...
Yeah. Perfected devotees are the stage of bhava and prema.
Okay, so Bharat Maharaj goes into that category of perfected devotee.
Okay. Because they are in the category of yata tatava vidadatu lampato. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do, Krishna, you do it to me. You want to make me a deer? No problem. In my deer's body, I will love you. You want to send me to hell? You send me, no problem. So therefore, only with such people, Krishna plays these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're saying that for perfected devotees, Krishna will use them as an instrument to convey some messages or instructions. So, I mean, that will become like a part of his leela. And they play a role there. So none of these apply to them.
Yeah.
Thanks, Prabhuji. And whenever you have time next time, can you please elaborate on the, the types of karma, and if you can do like a seminar? I really appreciate that, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful answer. Now I request Parima Mataji. You can please go ahead, Mataji. Your question or realization.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Please accept my Dandavat Pranams. It was a very, very, it's a very enlightening class, especially about the karma factor. But there's one thing that I always keep, keep thinking that, Prabhuji, suppose if in my last life, if I have hurt someone or if I've caused some harm to somebody, mm-hmm. and if in this lifetime, if that same person mm-hmm. or a different person mm-hmm. gives me some harm, mm-hmm. my karmic account gets settled, but the person through which I'm getting the reaction, will that person again be involved in a negative karmic reaction? Is it like a chain reaction?
For those who fall within the category of karma, I hope your question is for them.
Yes. Because
as I mentioned, devotees don't fall within the category of karma. That does not mean that they are not responsible for their actions, but Krishna will hold them responsible for their actions and not the law of karma. So with that clarification, I will answer your question. If you have hurt someone and he may come back to hurt you, your negative karma may get neutralized by that, but he will definitely generate some bad karma because of that.
But sometimes, Prabhuji, we get that karmic settlement through somebody else.
Yeah, like it's possible. Yeah. Because Krishna will utilize whoever is ready to act in that kind of way. Someone who is very much triggered by mode of passion or ignorance, who wants to hurt someone, he will bring him. And if someone is ready to receive that kind of karma, he will join them so that he will act and he will gain some karma, and your karma is neutralized through him like that.
But Prabhuji, if suppose we are in the sadhak avastha, and if we are in the process of chanting and doing devotional service, even though we have not perfected, does mm-hmm. Krishna help us to alleviate our karma quickly and go back to him?
Yeah, the moment you start practicing bhakti, at that moment only Krishna has taken charge of your life. So every situation that you are put into, Krishna has personally put you into that situation, just that he is waiting for you to respond in a way that would make him proud.
Because I always feel that I usually feel that, I could have got a much bigger punishment, but he is giving me punishment only that I can, handle it well.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. That is Krishna's mercy.
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you so much. I just wanted to clarify this point. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for this enlightening class. And please give, you know, what this Mataji said, Sukh Sagari Mataji, that we would love to, you know, have you say something on a karma and everything, if you can take that session. I would really thank you, Prabhuji.
Arises, we'll do.
Yes, Prabhuji, thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful answer. Now I request Lalitangi Radha Mataji, please, you can please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. Very, very beautiful class, Prabhuji. So much, you know, whenever you come, you do in-depth study of whatever is said so that we can understand very clearly. That's very, very useful. So thank you for explaining about jnana and vairagya, and which jnana is acceptable and which is not. That's a very beautiful explanation. So my question is about the seventh chapter, where after explaining that Udara, all the four souls who surrender to him, Krishna says that Udara sarva evaite jnani tvatmaiva me matam, that I think of the jnani as myself. What is that? And then of course Bahunam Janmanam Ante, it comes that Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So what is that jnani that he mentions about?
Oh, that jnani is a jnana mishra bhakta. That is how our acharyas explain. He is a jnana mishra bhakta who has a tinge of jnana. Even though he is primarily practicing devotional service, he is affected by the tinge of jnana, right? So his prior practice of jnana is sort of slightly weakened his practice of bhakti. That is a jnana mishra bhakta, this kind of jnana mishra bhakta. So he is not pure devotee. And Krishna does say, jnani tu atmaiva me matam. I consider that jnani as being as good as myself. But in that commentary to that particular verse, Srila Vishwanathacharya Thakur quotes many other verses where Krishna very clearly says, but my pure devotee is greater than myself.
Oof.
He says, this jnani is, I consider equal to me, and my pure devotee, I consider him greater than myself. So like that. So that jnani, of course, who that jnani is a point of contention. Different acharyas give different explanations. So more or less our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas indicate that it refers to Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Of course, Ramanuja Acharya says that because Krishna says that Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhaktir Vishishyate. Because he's performing Eka Bhakti. It in Eka Bhakti, he says, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. So this devotee is a pure devotee. He is called a jnani because he has knowledge of Krishna. Like that he says. But our acharyas give slightly different explanation for this. They say that he is a jnana mishra bhakta like that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. So I don't know if you have time for one more question.
I have time, but if the coordinator allows, then we can take it.
Is it okay, Mataji? Or maybe the others can get a chance and... if there is time.
Actually, nobody raised hands, Mataji. If you want, Prabhuji is okay, right? You can go with your question.
Mataji, I have raised up my hand, but you can, after her, I'll ask.
Oh, I thought you already finished, right? So I thought it was okay, Mataji. After Mataji, you can go ahead, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Prabhuji, which jnana is favorable for bhakti? And when does it become unfavorable for bhakti? I mean, of course, you explained. Can you like kind of summarize this?
I said that there is knowledge about the nature of the soul, knowledge about Krishna, that is favorable knowledge. But tattvamasi, that knowledge which emphasizes on the qualitative oneness of the jiva and Krishna, that is not very favorable. I mean, it is true, it is real knowledge, but we don't dwell on that knowledge so much. We generally dwell on the differences which distinguishes Krishna as being superior and worthy of being our master. So we
focus on those 14 additional qualities which Krishna possesses, which the living entity can never possess. So we focus on those qualities because that will only inspire us to surrender. That will only inspire us to accept Krishna as our as a worthy master. So that we want to focus on. We don't want to focus on the qualitative oneness, even though it is true. So that is the point. That is the kind of jnana which is unfavorable.
Wow, that explains very clearly, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Mataji, you can please go ahead, Mataji, with your question.
Deepika. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, eternally indebted to you for today's session. Prabhuji, my question is that the transcendentalists, the jnanis and the dhyanis, to perfect their sadhana, they need the element of bhakti. So what, which feature of bhakti would they like want to use so that they can perfect their jnana and the being a perfected jnani? Like what feature of bhakti they would take?
See, basically the bare minimum is they have to at least accept the personal form of the Lord to be real, true, worshipable. And also, if you actually see in the third canto, description of Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga by Kapila Muni, he very clearly indicates the various limbs of practice of Jnana and Ashtanga Yoga, in which he talks about worshipping the deity form, meditating on the, he talks about Vaikuntha Leela Abhidhyanam as a limb of Ashtanga Yoga, meditating on the pastimes of the Lord as a limb of Ashtanga Yoga. So, worshipping the deity form, meditating on the pastimes, hearing are all actually actually limbs of, they may be secondary limbs, but nevertheless, they are limbs of Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga also.
Thank you, Prabhuji. So then why he wouldn't get attracted to the pastimes of the Lord and elevate himself and, you know, just wanting to be a transcendentalist on that platform, why wouldn't he want to go ahead? Because pastimes are so much relished. So why wouldn't he be attracted? What is that thing which is not allowing him to not accept those pastimes, to relish those pastimes, you know?
So it is not just, as they say, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. So what makes a devotee's eyes perceive Krishna and his pastimes to be very beautiful is the Sukriti. Okay. So something that we take easily for granted, we say that, Krishna's pastimes are so wonderful. Krishna's form is so beautiful. So everyone should get attracted. Everyone. It's like telling, my mother is so good. She's the best mother in the world. Everyone should realize it. No, everyone cannot realize it. You are realizing it because you have had such a long association with your mother. You have experienced their kindness and benevolence. But whereas others who have not experienced that kindness and benevolence, they will not see your mother to be so benevolent. So the same way, someone who lacks that Sukriti, Bhaktionmukhi Sukriti, the Jnani and the Yogi, he will not necessarily, he may as a duty to perfect his practice, he may hear the pastimes, but his eyes are not anointed with that prerequisite Sukriti. So his eyes will not perceive the pastimes to be so blissful. So ultimately the principle of beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. That principle is a universal principle. So one who lacks that Sukriti, the Jnani and the Yogi, he will not see those pastimes as worth, becoming a part of. You know, he will do it just as a limb of devotional service. Like
that. Thank you, Prabhuji. So, is it okay to ask one last question? Is it okay? Okay, Radharani Mataji, or somebody else has to ask?
You can go ahead, Mataji.
Okay, thank you, Mataji. Okay, so Prabhuji, when we are chanting, when we are doing pure chanting and we are performing pure devotional service, so our prarabdha, unmanifested reactions, everything gets burned. So for a transcendentalist who's already reached to the point of liberation, and to go to that level also, it's quite a big thing. Like, it's not so easy that to go to that level. So then his prarabdha karma, everything gets burnt, right? Because he's not going to have any material desires. He's not going to act in any way. So to get another reaction.
Who exactly are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about the jnani and the dhyanis. Yeah, because to reach to their platform also, it's not a small thing. Like to reach to that level of attaining that sukh, Brahman sukh, is also quite a bit of endeavor. So for them, like, as how when the devotees are chanting, pure devotional service they are performing, all their prarabdha and their unmanifested reactions, sanchit karma, everything gets destroyed, right? So for a dhyani, an agnani who has reached to that level of wanting to, you know, attaining that Brahman sukh, which is also a very big thing for to reach to that level. So even their prarabdha karma is destroyed, right, Prabhuji? Because they are not performing any karmas. Yeah, I mean, no material desires.
That's destroyed along with the destruction of their body. When they give up that body at that time, when they become ready to attain liberation, with the destruction of the body, their prarabdha karma is destroyed. But for devotees, they don't have to wait till the body for the prarabdha karma to destroy. The moment they take up to a conscious practice of devotional service, from that moment onwards, even though they have a material body, they do have a material body, but that material body is not given by prarabdha karma. It is not a product of prarabdha karma, but it is given by Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
So, thank you all very much for your patient listening and participation.
Prabhuji, thank you so much. Sorry to interrupt. Prabhuji, I just had one quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering, I don't know if you have the time or if you want to do it another time.
They can leave if it's okay. Or maybe some other program is scheduled after this. I don't know.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, we can arrange your another class and we can have more question answers because it's already over time.
Yes.
Sure, I'll reserve my question, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Sorry, Mataji, but you can ask for next time.
Sure, Mata. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Passing the Deva Sapatitanam Bhavanibhyo.
Bhavanibhyo. Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Balram Shakti Prabhuji Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, once again for such a wonderful and enlightening class and giving your association to us. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu, Dhanvat Pranam, all
Krishna, Prabhu.